Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have a really awesome founder, you know, a founder that has exited, you know, companies, a founder that has raised money, and also a founder that knows a thing or two about this whole world of AI and, you know, LLMs and you name it. You know, today we're going to be talking about the good stuff that we like to hear, that building, the scaling. And again, you know, there's going to be a lot that we can learn, you know, from the way that they thought, you know, from being, you know, just technologists to really making money. You know, now they're riding this rocket ship, you know, that we're going to be talking, you know, with Richard about. But again, without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Richard Zucker. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. Great to be here. How are you doing?
Very well. So very excited to have this conversation with you. And obviously, you know, quite the upbringing that you had, born in Germany and also raised, you know, between Germany and Ethiopia. So give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up for you?
Life was pretty good. You know, I like my parents, especially my dad, wanted to get out of East Germany. And Ethiopia was one of those places that made that possible. It's part of the East Bloc. And so lived there for a couple of years. And then, you know, did my undergrad in Leipzig, in Montpellier in southern France, as an Erasmus exchange student back then. And then the Max Planck Institute for my master's. And then looked at where the best researchers are in AI and who have the most citations and most impact on the field of AI. And most of those were in the US. So I moved eventually to Stanford and did my PhD there. And I was very fortunate to be at the right time to hear and see people talk about neural networks and deep learning for computer vision and speech recognition. And I thought, wouldn't it be amazing if we can use those same ideas of just giving AI raw data and then having it learn the features and apply that and use those kinds of ideas and adjust them, modify them, and make them work for natural language processing.
And obviously quite early, because I mean, when you thought about AI and getting into it, you know, was more like around 2009 before, you know, people were really talking about it. So that's the time where you went to Stanford. So what really got you to start, you know, getting excited about the world of AI and what was possible with it?
Yeah, I mean, I started even before that in 2003. I studied linguistic computer science, which is essentially a different word for natural language processing, which is one of the most exciting areas of AI. Certainly the most interesting manifestation of human intelligence. And if we understand intelligence better, it helps us understand ourselves better. If we can recreate a capability, then we understand that capability better. And so it's just been a fascination of mine since a long time. Even in high school, I enjoyed math and languages, and they kind of marry also when you try to get computers to use math to understand languages. And then in 2010, there was kind of this idea trying to go from first principles. You know, a lot of the people at the time were designing specific features to try to solve one task really, really well. And they became, you know, they talked to a lot of linguists and they tried to get really, really good at understanding sentiment or translation and different kinds of things. And I thought, well, wouldn't it be more amazing if you just give it raw data and have the AI figure out all of those steps? So it was a little bit like first principles thinking, and then a lot of initial pushback from the community, but a handful of people did enjoy that line of research and were supportive. Of course, my two advisors, Chris Manning, Andrew Ng, but also, you know, Joshua Bengio was the first to invite me to come give a talk somewhere else. And we won a Turing Award a few years ago for that deep learning work as well. So a little bit of a mix of being stubborn and first principles thinking.
So eventually you graduated, you become a professor, and then also you were doing research, you know, there at Stanford all the way up until 2018. But that was the time where you thought maybe it made sense to do something of your own. So what was that thought process like?
Yeah, you know, in 2014, when I graduated, I saw most of my smart friends go to two or three companies. Mostly they went to Google. Some of them went to Facebook. Some of them went to Amazon, but the majority of them went to Google. And I thought, well, it's kind of unfortunate that this amazing technology is stuck in the hands of a few very large companies when really every company could benefit from this. And so I started MetaMind with the idea of making it very, very easily accessible to create your own neural networks and do whatever you want to do with them. You can drag and drop images into the browser and create, you know, 3 lines of Python code to create your own image classifier. We did natural language processing, and we did some research even in the startup. And so it went really well, but we also realized, wow, this technology in the hands of a company that had amazing distribution and, no pun intended, an incredible sales force would be even more impactful. And so after less than 2 years, we got acquired by Salesforce, where I became chief scientist and then started to merge a lot of the different machine learning and AI efforts within the company. Eventually became EVP and did a lot of research. We started a whole research group there, but also actually shipped product, which was very motivating and fun.
I mean, first company, first exit is quite amazing, quite remarkable, especially when you're doing an exit to a company like Salesforce. I mean, that's a spectacular. I mean, how was that journey too, as well, to be able to see the full cycle of a company? You know, when you're going from creating it, building it, scaling it, to all of a sudden, you know, you're reaching the finish line, and especially doing it with a company like Salesforce. That's incredible.
It was really, really amazing and very meaningful. It was also quite helpful that in 2016, I think Salesforce stock was at around 75, and now it's at, you know, 300, and of course still a holder. And so I have to say, you know, it's interesting. A lot of other startup founders often came to me and after and asked, actually, how bad is it? I'm like, what are you talking about? It's amazing. They're like, oh, you know, it's big company politics. And I'm like, I felt like in Salesforce, everyone was just trying to do the right thing. And yeah, sometimes people disagree on what the right thing is, right? So you have to argue for it and you have to talk about why you think one way of works better than the other. But everyone had their heart in the right place and tried to do and build amazing products for our customers. So I actually really enjoyed my time. And of course, you do have to spend some time understanding the organization, understanding how to make things happen. But it was a really interesting and exciting challenge. I felt it was very meaningful because we really pushed the research world forward. You know, we invented prompt engineering while at Salesforce. We built the first large language model and actually synthesized proteins from those AI-generated, you know, biologic proteins. And they worked. They folded and everything. That line of research still hasn't really gotten the limelight I think it deserves, though several startups have already started from that work, including the first author of the paper and various others. And so it was a very meaningful time, shipping real products, seeing impacts on thousands of different companies, as well as really pushing the technology and the research forward.
What was it like to experience a big organization like Salesforce? What kind of perspective do you think that gave you, especially, you know, having been, you know, everything that you knew, you know, really being a founder of something that started from nothing, where you were building the pipes, all of a sudden you were at a big company where the pipes were already very well, you know, designed and optimized, and being able to see it more from like a larger enterprise type of approach.
Yeah, I learned so much. Where do I start? I guess a big one is just the incredible sales motion also that Salesforce has, but also the values that Mark Benioff instilled in the organization, making sure that, you know, stakeholder capitalism and at the same time, you know, improving the shareholders' values also and showing that alignment that's possible. I learned a ton from Mark just in terms of, you know, a good mix of listening and decision-making and collecting data and from time to time saying like, this is how we're going to do it. I have to be honest also that, you know, after 10 years of academia, sales didn't come naturally to me, right? And so that was like something that I've learned a ton about and that we're now using at U.com also. And, you know, trying to hire for your weaknesses, becoming a better manager. Salesforce was very good to me also in terms of just training and having mentors and coaches and things like that to keep improving. And I think if you have that growth mindset, being some amount of time in a large company can really help you as a founder also.
So once an entrepreneur, always an entrepreneur. And so after, you know, about 4 years and a half in Salesforce, you know, you decided it was time to put the notice in. So what triggered that?
You know, we invented prompt engineering in 2018, and what that meant is we could train a single neural network for all of the different and hardest tasks of natural language processing you just trigger that one neural network in natural language to solve any kind of task. What's the sentiment? What's the translation? What is the summary of this paragraph? Who is the president? You know, all of these different questions. And I thought, well, clearly, if we have this one powerful neural net, the world of search and finding answers online should certainly change. And then fast forward 2 years to 2020, and like the world hadn't changed at all. Google was still getting worse and worse, just more and more ads on top of fewer and fewer relevant organic links. They figured out that, you know, when you're a monopoly and you just need to increase shares and revenue every quarter, it's very easy to just go from 3 ads on top of the search results to 4 ads on top of the search results. And people would just stick with it because they didn't know that there are any alternatives. And so it felt like now was the time. The technology was right. We can use neural networks to massively improve how people find information online. The problem wasn't anymore to make them accessible. The problem was to deal with that influx of a massive deluge of information. And so the idea was to basically summarize search results instead of giving you lists of the links. And then we've actually transitioned more and more from a search engine via an answer engine to what we now realize is really the killer app, which is to be a productivity engine, help people be more productive when it comes to knowledge work.
So now let's talk about what you guys are up to with you. And just for the people that are listening to really get it, what ended up being the business model, you know, and how you guys make money? Because I know that that was a pivotal moment too of figuring out how to monetize. So walk us through that.
Yeah. So high level, U.com basically combines the best of what ChatGPT and Google offer to give you the most accurate answers with references in order to make AI agents and knowledge workers more productive. What does that mean, right? You ask a question, you get an answer. Now that answer has real citations. A lot of our competitors fake that citation problem, and half of their links or citations or references are just random numbered links sprinkled into an LLM text, which you can't really trust. So there's a lot of hallucination. And it turns out some users are okay with hallucinations, right? If your life, like, it doesn't really matter that much what answers you get, you can use a lot of different tools. And if they're 70% accurate and you have a lot of time on your hands, you can kind of deal with it and double click into it and search it again on Google and verify it and whatnot. Now, we figured out like that the organizations and the people that really care about accuracy are knowledge workers. So we have one of the largest hedge funds in the United States as a customer of U.com. We have one of the largest European insurance companies as a customer, largest press agency of Germany that has thousands of different TV and newspaper stations as a customer. As a nerd, I'm really excited to have the Institute of Advanced Study in Princeton be a customer. And what they pay for are two things, either APIs, where they get answers and they can fuse them into their own products, or just a subscription and enterprise site license, where we combine their company internal and organizational internal data, as well as company external data on the web to give them extremely accurate answers with actually correct citation. You can click on and then scrolls directly down to where it found those facts. No one else does that. And you can even build agents where you can have it automate an entire workflow for you. And that's sort of what helps people unlock their productivity with AI.
So how much capital have you guys raised to date? And what has been the journey of raising the money?
We have raised 3 rounds for a total of just shy of $199 million so far.
Hey, guys. So pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard. And already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on, when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
And what has been that journey of going from seed stage to Series A to, you know, the motions too?
The motions, yeah. So it's been, you know, a really exciting time. In many ways, my biggest lesson is that when you're ahead in terms of technology, that's just one piece of the puzzle. It's not really what drives revenue as much. And so a big lesson for me is that best technology is only useful if you also have really strong marketing. We've had companies that are massively inferior in terms of technology, burn through millions of dollars in marketing, and it's kind of working, right? And they're like semi-lying, and I'm like, as an academic and a German, I don't really want to overhype things so much and claim we got 60 million new users when it's really a few thousand in some partnership deal. But I have to acknowledge that you have to kind of overhype things a little bit sometimes. I'm trying to adjust, but I don't really want to lose my factual sort of correctness. And so we're hiring better and better marketing folks into the team. And yeah, that was a big lesson. Technology is amazing, but you got to distribute and you got to actually sell it. And so we're now, this year, we've transitioned kind of from just like, oh, look, we have the most amazing technology to like, how do we help a customer really become more productive with this? And that's how we've closed all these deals I mentioned and how we are now an exponential curve when it comes to revenue. We doubled revenue every quarter this year. This quarter, it looks like we're more than triple it again. And so with that like literal hockey stick curve, I'm really excited to look into the next year.
So you were talking about growth. You were talking about marketing before. I mean, I got to ask you, how the hell did you guys get the domain you.com?
That was one of the many amazing inputs from Mark Benioff. He had actually bought that domain over 20 years ago. And you know, I explained to him what I wanted to do with the new company, and he's very gracious. He became our largest and lead investor and board member for the Series C. And as part of that, also gave the domain.
That's incredible. So obviously, when we're thinking about investors, you know, they're betting on a vision, right? Because I'm sure that Mark Benioff and the others were like excited about the future that you were living into. So with that being said, if you were to go to sleep tonight and you wake up in a world where the vision of you is fully realized, what does that world look like?
That world will have a lot more knowledge and a lot more productive people in on the planet. People will have access to unbiased information that they can verify quickly and that makes them insanely more productive. And so to help overall organizations massively excel. And, you know, one big epiphany we've had just as an anecdote was we had a company called Mimecast and they bought like about 200 seed licenses. And we thought, amazing, this is an incredible customer. So we decided to do a workshop with them. They're a cybersecurity company. And we said in the workshop, hey, like, feel free to bring other people, not just the engineering team and the initial teams, but bring everyone, sales, service, HR, recruiting, analysts, engineers, service folks, like everyone. And then they bought many more licenses after that workshop because they realized like, wow, this is really foundational technology. And at this point, I'm almost, the best way I can describe it is if your organization could benefit from moving from paper to a computer, your organization can likely benefit from using a computer with you.com. That's how broad it is. And that's hard to explain to people without going through very specific examples. So let me give you a concrete example. Let's say you're in marketing and one of your workflows is that every couple of weeks, you get a big PDF file with a bunch of interesting new features that your product and then design and sales and so on like built. And you say, all right, please market these new features to your industry. So then you take that PDF, you look at the new features, you go on the web, you compare them to your competitors, you write 2 email marketing campaigns for 2 different industries, and you set out to send like 5 to 10 tweets and LinkedIn messages. You basically can just describe that entire workflow that you do to an agent on you.com. And then next week when a PDF comes in, you just drag and drop it into your browser and it'll just go through all of these steps and do all of those workflows for you fully automatically, and you're done. And so we've had companies and employees tell us like, holy shit, this saves me like 10 hours, 20 hours a week of what I used to have to do manually. And so as we extrapolate that, I think the more you care about complex knowledge work, the more you get that 10x experience from switching from Google to you.com. And so in that world, in the future, I think we can become a multi-trillion dollar company, right? When you think about all the productivity, all the answers and information that you can get on you.com, it's just an incredibly exciting future for knowledge, for learning, and for productivity.
So in parallel, you've also been investing. You know, AIX Ventures, first fund 50 million, second fund 200 million. So how are you able to really, you know, do both in parallel? And I'm sure that there's been a lot that you've learned from wearing the investor hat, no, and seeing patterns, seeing what works, what doesn't, you know, what some founders that are succeeding are doing versus the ones that are failing, how to identify, you know, also potential good hits and good returners. So when it comes to patterns, what have you learned?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There's a ton of synergy between these two. You know, it started because after the acquisition, I mostly kept my grad student lifestyle, stayed in a pretty small apartment, didn't buy, you know, a bunch of Lambos and whatnot. And instead, I just invested in all my smartest friends and interns and employees and students. And I love AI. And so AI is omni-use technology and everyone is exploring different ideas. And it turns out I was very fortunate to have an incredibly smart group of people around me. And so as I just wanted to hang out with them and we talk over dinners and so on, I was like, hey, can I just put some money into your like company? Or they asked like, hey, you know, do you want to invest in this startup that I'm thinking about? And so that worked out really well. My own angel portfolio has over 17x since like 2016. And so I thought, well, how do I scale that? And my time doesn't scale. I really want to build still. But you just partner with other people and there's, you know, a lot of synergies. And so we brought in other investing partners, what we call them, who are full-time faculty at Stanford and Berkeley, full-time founders like Anthony Goldblum, the founder and CEO of Kaggle, who sold it to Google, now started a new company called Sumble. And we all have just naturally deal flow by being part of the AI community in many cases for over a decade or 2 decades. And so that means also that we're just getting that deal flow, but at some point it becomes unwieldy. I invest in a bunch of different companies and I didn't want to spend a lot of time on paperwork and some basic diligence things. And so we basically now in the fund combine a headquarters team that does all the traditional great VC work with a team that actually stays at that cutting edge of AI, the investing partners like myself. And we think that's really important in a field like AI that moves so quickly. Imagine you're an expert in AI 5 years ago. It wouldn't matter that much anymore what you did if you stopped being an expert and started just investing. I think it'd be very hard for you to understand what the cutting edge possibilities are in AI. And so that's basically the foundation of AIX Ventures, combining investing partners with practitioners of AI with a strong headquarters team to get a new kind of VC model going. And, you know, honestly, it sometimes feels like a lot of the VC work is barely really feels like work. So what I mean by that, you know, I sometimes have events here at my ranch. I bring a bunch of friends in. We discuss the future. And I love these little unconference styles where you just have people discuss the future and think about, you know, where things are going and you debate it and you have little, you know, sessions. And then it turns out, and that's my friends and some of their friends come, a lot of them wanted to start companies. And then you just had this event and like, that doesn't feel like work to me. And if I go to dinner and I talk to a really smart, ambitious founder who wants to change the world and build incredible new technology, we just recently invested in this amazing company called Parallel Bio. They built humanoid lymph node organoids that are essentially tiny little lymph nodes that in a Petri dish, and that allows you to test drugs much, much more quickly. That company at scale has the potential to save hundreds of millions of animal lives. Let that sink in. One company could save hundreds of millions of animal lives that are just bred with the worst kinds of genes to get the kinds of cancers that you then want to treat and learn how to treat. It's a terrible life for those animals. And so you can do so much good in just talking to founders that have those kinds of visions and want to make people more productive, learn things, improve healthcare, improve biotechnology. And all of this is just fun. And so I enjoy spending my evenings and have dinners with folks like that. And you know, on top of that, you just have to work a whole lot.
So imagine I put you into a time machine and I bring you back in time to maybe that moment where you were thinking about starting MetaMind. And let's say, you know, you had the opportunity of having a chat with your younger self and being able to give your younger self one piece of advice for launching a business. What would that be and why, given what you know now?
I think the biggest thing probably is just to be even more constructively optimistic. I kind of coined this term constructive optimism for myself. And, you know, even though I love AI and I pushed AI forward, and I had a lot of these foundational pieces and foundational ideas that led to ChatGPT, I didn't scale the models that I've had like invented and co-invented with my co-authors and also my co-founder, Brian McCann, our CTO here at U.com. We could have scaled them even further, right? And just tried to push harder and harder to get funding for $30, $50, $100 million to train a single model. And so I think that would be the biggest advice is go bigger with the ideas that you've had, train even bigger word vectors, contextual vectors, and prompt engineering single neural networks that can solve every task in NLP, including, for instance, language modeling, which was literally on our to-do list for this prompt engineering paper as another task to add. And you know, ultimately, you know, our papers as an academic, it's great because they got cited, they inspired other folks like those at OpenAI to train a single model and just prompt that model with a different question. But we could have gone even bigger, even earlier, I think. That would be my main advice to my own self.
I love it. So Richard, for the people that are listening that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
Send me an email at richard@u.com or follow me on Twitter or LinkedIn. Try to, you know, answer all reasonable requests.
Amazing. Well, hey, well, Richard, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an absolute honor to have you with us.
Thanks for having me and thanks for listening, everyone.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts, or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening and see you at the next episode.